suppose it will be.
All right, all set. Let's see, call to order for the regular meeting of the Civil Service Commission. Let's see who is present here. Let's go around the table. Trenton Byrd.
Joe Vanderstoop.
Rich Daniels.
Dan Reisfeld.
Scott Snyder.
Amber Richards.
Matthew Hammer.
All right, and Rob Killian will be joining us a little bit later. Let's start with the conflict of interest. Let's go around the table and mention any conflicts we may have had since our last meeting.
I mentioned at the last meeting, but I will mention again that I'm working on a campaign for in favor of Proposition 1, like to build a new public safety facility, and check with the ethics group here, and just need to disclose that as we start these meetings.
And I have a, I guess, monthly or recurring disclosure. I also have involvement on a county commission where we had to make recommendations for the distribution of the mid-tax proceeds. The department participates in one program that's a recipient of those funds.
Dan Reisfeld, I have no conflicts of interest to report.
And Trenton Byrd, I have no conflicts either, and we'll return to that point with when Rob gets here. Next up on the agenda is a public comment. There are no members of the public here, so we'll skip that one in case somebody shows up. And now we're on to new business. A review of October 6th minutes. Did everybody have a chance to review them?
I'll make a motion for approval.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
The minutes are approved. And now we'll move on to unfinished business. And we're going to return to the review of the consideration of revisions of agency disqualifiers.
So, based on the discussion last time, there's the revised approved current version is in the packet, and then I printed off just as a reference the material that I had sent out based on the these are the current disqualifiers that are out there. So in a previous email I had sent out the research I did the last time, along with sort of the history of where we started with the disqualifiers and how we got to the version prior to this version. So this is just the current research that I sent out, not the prior year.
So the agency disqualifiers you have printed up in the packet here, this is the agency disqualifiers that we need to approve now, or these are.
These are as they were approved at the last meeting. So there was a revision. There were a couple of revisions in the employment section. So the first bullet was revised, and then we had removed a couple of bullets that sort of related to that bullet. And so this reflects the revisions that came out of the last meeting, but we. During that discussion, there was some talk amongst the commissioners that they wanted to revisit or at least look at some of the other disqualifiers. I know driving was one, and drug use, I think, was another one of them that particularly were mentioned. So I said I would pull, kind of see where other agencies were currently and see if anything had really, nothing really much has changed since we pulled the information last year. So there's no need. It was just, these are approved, but there was discussion to sort of bring it back to see if the commission wanted to make further revisions to different.
So I was not here last meeting.
We just wanted to, there are some things that just wanted to simplify, some things that were duplicative, So we just tried to clean up some of the language and clean up some of the, and then there were some substantive issues. I don't remember all. It's good. It's great that Chief's here because the questions we would have had for him would have been helpful. But So we can maybe go through that. But that's it, I think. Amber, was it? It wasn't anything major league, but
no.
It was...
Well, in the minutes from our last meeting,
yes,
the language that we changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Wouldn't it be safe to say that what you were trying to do is to get around the technical aspects of why and to open
that's,
it up
thank
to
you,
yeah.
Scott,
that,
yes,
any
that was,
aspect
that
of being untruthful or omitting stuff?
Yeah, based upon our situation with the case that we had to deal with. So that we wouldn't have, we'd have an easy way to deal with that in the future.
What do you...
Well, we can go through them if you want to read through them again just quickly and... Scott probably remembers, too, where we were with... it's not all of them that were. I think it was more the... Well, let's see. Some of them are pretty, are very straightforward, and there's nothing that needs to be.
And then, Amber, will you say a little bit more? I think that was another thing we talked about was, especially during the in the driving and drug use, did were we matching what other...
Yeah.
Yeah. So I, when I was sort of going back through things, the we came up with what we have currently in the disqualifiers during the revisions last year because we actually there. If you look through these, like Bremerton, there's a number of agencies that have almost identical Des Moines driving disqualifications. Issaquah is also very similar. From what I've found has changed, and so this was pulled. I think we actually decided to just copy exactly what Bremerton had. One of the things Rob had mentioned was to make sure we don't have any city requirements, insurance requirements for driving a city vehicle. I've asked both our HR and the city clerk to look at our insurance policy, and we don't have anything in place that, you know, would restrict someone based on their driving record. But the sort of idea, I think, was to not do anything, you know, out on our own, but to mirror what best practices were in other jurisdictions, you know, of a similar nature. And so I think that was, I think, why the decision was to go with Bremerton.
Chief, you had a comment?
I will just echo what Amber said. Last year, we were pretty comprehensive and thorough in making sure that we were consistent with agencies that are respectable and do a good job in their hiring practices. And I think that, again, I will just echo what she said. Nothing's really changed from 12 months ago.
Okay.
I think maybe in a couple years, maybe every couple years, maybe relook at them. But I think it's... After I looked at this again, and I'm looking at this now, nothing has changed from 12 months ago. So I think we are very consistent. I think we were, if I remember correctly, we were pretty comprehensive and thorough in examining what many, many agencies did throughout the state to make sure that we weren't off base. And I think this right here, this agency disqualifiers that you have listed here, is real consistent with what other agencies are doing, not just in this county, but beyond this county.
And I know that you just went through a lot of hiring in the last year. So, and if you didn't catch any mistakes or any omissions in this list over the course of that, all that hiring, then I think that it's pretty comprehensive.
That's a good point, Trey. I'm sure this board knows that 7 of the 20 officers, over a third of the department I've hired, and thanks to the good work of this commission and bringing us, in my opinion, some of the best hires we could have got, we've got some really, really good hires, and I'm excited about that. And I think as a disclosure, I think Jo should disclose that she's had a few of my officers in class and taught them very well at a young age. And I'm not disclosing her age, but I am disclosing that she was their teacher, and I got recommendation from her that they were good students at that time. Is that true?
Yeah. Well, I mean, John, you know.
So, a little levity there, but I really believe that you have done a good job of putting forth certain screening requirements, and it has shown we've got some very good people.
You know, Chief, one of the things that I know that we talked about in the meeting was on the drug use, the use of, what is it? Is it Ritalin? One of the,
no, it was
Adderall.
Adderall,
and with the younger candidates today, that so many of them have used those drugs, although they're common, they are illegal, and so we were trying to frame something that would still give you the option if they hadn't used those, and you know, the time frame was kind of the issue, and you know what I'm saying, that so we don't, I'm curious what your thoughts are about that.
I think what you have down here for drug use, yeah. I get that kids do that,
yeah.
Especially, it's very popular in high school, and if anyone doesn't know here, Adderall is used as a weight loss drug for a lot of young people, and I think it's even more common among young women using it. But because you have 5 years, so let's say you're 18 when you graduate,
right.
And you're 23 when you're applying, I think that gives it, that's, I don't think we'll have to change what you have there. I think that's pretty
consistent.
Right, and
then we're thinking, too, even when they graduate from college, because a lot of them use these as a study aid, keep them up, you know, in there. So that was, I think, something that Rob was talking about, and so he's not here, but...
But our thinking was, with this 5 years, that if they knew they wanted to go into law enforcement, then about the time they're 19 or 20, they better think twice before using those things.
Yeah, because...
And they're also, it's also very easy to get prescribed.
Yeah, so, I don't know, I would be uncomfortable, because I would be uncomfortable hiring someone who within just the last few years was using prescription drugs illegally.
Just also to point out as a reference, like if you compare our drug use disqualifiers to a lot of the others, I feel, and I think this is actually a positive thing coming out of the civil service conference, like having some more, a little bit more leniency in those. Ours, I feel like, are a good, I think it's a good bar to set, but I definitely don't think that they're like way, you know, considerably over the top, because there's some agencies in here that, I mean,
8 years.
Yeah, that, yeah. That I think, you know, have a lot more. Limitations on drug use, so I feel like ours are pretty, I think they, it still accomplishes sort of what we're trying to accomplish in an initial screening, but it doesn't go too far over the top. So
we still need to be able to get young people who, enough young people who are qualified, and if we set the bar too high, we're going to get too few.
No, but if you set it too low, then you wind up hiring people that you really have,
and that's, of course,
become problematic and deal with, and yeah, I agree. We fired some fantastic people in the last couple of years, but I'm more concerned about lowering the bar and breaking the trend.
And I think you strike a pretty good standard, because in here, I think with Amber, as you look through here, most of them are 8 to 10 years. So five is pretty
good. Are you all with the five, Richard?
I'm all right with the five for majority of drugs. I do want to go back, though, and talk a little bit in particular about marijuana.
Okay.
And I kind of see that as being a little bit different than in what I want to call hard drugs, even though they're all controlled substances. What we have here is that if somebody admits to possessing marijuana 4 years and 11 months ago, we're not going to look at them.
In the dialogue last time, a year ago, in that dialogue, the commission addressed that issue, and the decision was made that marijuana was like, we weren't even going to consider it.
Well, that's not what this says.
Yeah, I agree.
Marijuana is a controlled
substance. It is.
And granted, marijuana, or Washington, no longer has a state criminal sanction against it, but controlled substances are defined federally, and marijuana is included in the definition. So I think we probably need to, you know, that's an ambiguity there. It probably wasn't intended. I don't really want to freely see marijuana use in law enforcement, because other things go along with it, but I think the five-year standard, particularly in today's society and with Washington's law, might be a little bit on the high side with regard to marijuana only.
But that's inconsistent with what we're reading in here with all these agencies you have, because they don't make they don't make exception for marijuana in here, and they're saying 10 years. They're saying automatic for any controlled substance. Auburn, Des Moines, same thing. There's this 3 years automatic. And then you go through the rest of them, they're 10 or 8 years for all of them. So we are on the low end already.
Yeah, and we're not bound by what other agencies
are doing. No, I think we need to be consistent because we're pulling from the same pool of applicants.
If we're looking at the drug use area here of the disqualifiers, there are 3 bullet points. The second 2 are convictions of illegal use,
mm-hmm.
I guess, or admission indicating a pattern. But it's only the first one that is actually just the illegal use.
But Richard is correct. And it is on a federal level.
The police should be on the adhering to the federal guidelines.
Yes. Oh yeah, no, I agree. I definitely don't want to see us hiring anyone who's a user of marijuana. I don't want to see us hiring anyone who's been a recent user in the past. But if we have somebody who, UW graduate, used it as a freshman, stopped, graduated, now he's looking to be an officer.
Wait,
a 3-year break in use, student history. I probably want to look at him as being a year out of college.
Waiting 5 years between illegal use of drugs and applying for a position as a police officer is perfectly reasonable. You're adhering to a federal guideline, a federal law that states marijuana is illegal.
Because if you go down that path, I think you have to go down the path of 5 years of a DUI. He was just using alcohol illegal, and alcohol is a legal substance. And here you have 5 years for that. So now you're going to go down, and that's a misdemeanor.
But that's different.
Why is it different?
Well, DUI involves reckless decision making, and use of a legal substance in an illegal manner. So you're implicating decision making as well as conduct.
I would say possessing a controlled substance by federal law is bad decision making. I would say that that's just as bad decision making as driving a car that you didn't quite know you were over the limit and you found out you were .08. Because I'm making 200 DUI arrests a year for many years. I led the state in Indianapolis for MAD and all the other organizations. Most people who drive drunk didn't think they were intoxicated.
No,
I wouldn't say it's such a bad decision, but when you possess marijuana that's a controlled substance, you know for sure it's a controlled substance. So if we're talking decision-making,
I would say the decision to drive intoxicated
is much less of a reckless decision.
I don't want to accept the conduct. I'm just concerned about the 5-year tail.
My feeling is that 5 years is a very reasonable amount of time between those sorts of decisions and being an officer.
Of the young people that are applying for, obviously, to be officers, are a number of them coming up with this issue of using marijuana or anything? Are we seeing that? Is it an issue yet?
When they get to me, it's not.
I haven't seen a lot of marijuana. It's been mostly the Adderall has been what I've been coming across.
So Adderall's been the bigger issue.
Mm-hmm.
And
honestly,
alcohol and DV, kind of. We've had quite a few admissions, not that they were arrested, but that they engaged in domestic violence. We had a few of those.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. In our backgrounds that we've had.
Well, you couple with the polygraph, it's better to get it on the table.
Yeah.
No, it's not that uncommon.
I think the thing that Richard's saying, which I understand, is we don't want to be eliminating potentially good candidates arbitrarily, but at the same time we want to be very careful to get the balance.
A lot of agencies have had really crippling experiences hiring people that shouldn't have been hired.
Well, then, are you still okay with the 5 years on the marijuana, or you think we should do something?
Yeah, I'm okay with I'm really questioning whether what the right balancing point is, because I know a lot of people who have been very successful in law enforcement and other professions, including 2 recent presidents, use marijuana in
at least two. Not within 5 years, though.
I don't agree with that.
We don't know. But
something to think, too, is maybe just in 24 months, if we've seen that we're having an issue with it, then bring back the table.
I'm not with five. It's just for marijuana, that strikes out. I also I'm wondering, given the state elimination of criminal sanctions, if you really need to be clear and say controlled substance to include marijuana, so we don't have someone coming through the door going, it's legal, when in fact it isn't.
Can we just put in...
Do you want a bullet point that is specifically
addressed? Well, no, just or a parenthetical note. Use the controlled substance and parenthesis, including marijuana.
As defined by the federal government.
Yeah, but I think control substance. Again, would be some people might not know that.
With those people.
Yeah,
it's
just
not the people you want.
Yeah, well, I'd be surprised if you couldn't find Kansas on a map. Okay, you know, yeah, I know what you mean, but okay. So,
what do we need to do? Are we just discussing?
Yeah, this is, and if you got the disqualifier, the changes that were made last week were approved. This is the current version, so there is no need for action. There were some unanswered questions, and it seemed like the commission wanted to come back and discuss more. And I put
it as an action.
Was Rob one of the people that had issued?
I think so.
That was more on the Adderall or the I was talking about.
If we said any federally controlled substance, is that, I don't even know the verbiage that goes with that, but does that then take us away from saying, well, our state defines it differently than the feds do?
Uniform Controlled Substances Act.
So why don't we put that in parentheses or something like that?
You could say as defined by the Uniform Controlled Substances Act, but we're not required to follow the federal standard.
I think you get there indirectly.
That's what we're saying.
You do have a prohibition if a person is using or possessing federally controlled substances. There's a federal law prohibition on possessing a firearm, which is a required condition to be a police officer.
Okay.
If someone who currently is using medical marijuana, they can't possess a firearm. And what does that do to their potential to serve on the police department?
And as the chief knows, you've got the LEA grant funds also require you to adhere to.
Yeah, so those are federal grants?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess we are required then.
Yeah, so you're not going to get that.
Well, once you're hired, you do. The question is, this is your qualifier.
But do you really want to have people going forward in the process that you cannot hire? What's the point?
That's the question.
All right. Well, do you want to add some? Would you be comfortable if we added a language as defined by the, Controlled Substances Act?
Yeah. I just want to. If we're going to say the door's closed, to the 4-year marijuana veteran, just make it clear the door's closed.
Is this an issue that we're having? Are people applying and being confused
Not yet.
Not that I've seen. Like I said, the only real drug-related item that has come up, and really only in the very last panel, was this sort of use of Adderall that I had not seen before. So marijuana had not previously been an issue.
Have you seen marijuana admissions on a personal history statement?
I'm sure there have been. Yeah.
Then I agree. We probably don't need to deal with it.
All right. Move on.
So are we leaving this alone, or are we going to change anything?
No, I guess for now we can leave it alone. The point I have, we're not getting traction on the 5-year. We definitely need to keep the prohibition. If everyone's happy with 5, then let's move on.
One option is, we're at some point, probably in April, we will need to have another hiring panel, and that can certainly be something that I, make a point to pay attention to during that screening process and see. And so we have some current statistics as far as what items got the most, basically removed the most people from the process, and bring some of that forward. And maybe then, at the meeting in June or something, we revisit the topic, but we would have some current sort of information that's relevant to us to sort of base the judgments on.
I think kind of what the chief was saying, it's not a problem yet, and we can address it when it becomes one. My gut is it will become an issue in the future, but maybe not at this point in time. So
I believe in the next 5 years the federal guidelines will be changed quite a bit as well. So 5 years.
Okay. real happy with the way this dealt with the line issue.
We changed that.
And again, that's an example where you know, every other agency that's released has lying on the application process being a disqualifier. But without compromising our deliberations in the recent appeal, that was a major, major frustrating issue for us to deal with as to how do you conclude and what is the evidentiary standard to show lying. And it turned out to be one that really couldn't be met. And we didn't have to meet it because our goal didn't require that we show lying. So a little bit of foresight probably would have saved us a lot of trouble and might save a bunch of these other agencies trouble if they did the same thing.
Yeah. I'd be willing to bet people don't test a lot of the other agencies. Like, I think we are more of a target for people sort of testing the boundaries of
but that. I think the bigger cost we really got with this, there was one other point I kind of want to throw around the table. We don't have to throw it as long as we do the marijuana, but just something to consider. We do have a bullet point as an automatic disqualifier. If there's any misdemeanor conviction committed while employed in a law enforcement capacity. Mm-hmm. A lot of work, we had a requirement that the deputies report any law enforcement contact or convictions they had. And I had one deputy who incurred a misdemeanor conviction for failing to maintain his lawn in his community. And I'm wondering if that person applied to us, having been a hardened criminal of not watering his lawn, if we really want to automatically disqualify him.
Well, it's not only that. If you have a dog off of a leash, or you got, you know, there's a lot of things you could have a misdemeanor that would be.
Some things may call for vetting or kind of a mature look, and the wording we have there doesn't allow that. It's automatic.
I also know that receiving a misdemeanor conviction shows some poor decision making, and as someone who is currently employed in the criminal justice capacity, to receive a conviction for a misdemeanor.
Well, I got to tell you, my non watering deputy was a pretty good deputy,
but he was obviously trying to prove a point.
No, he just was trying to conserve water because there was a major agenda of that, and his community to appreciate it. Code enforcement came out, and here's your site. And, mm-hmm. Okay, I'm guilty.
So he was
certainly it's a very, very de minimis example, but they're out there.
But in your example, it wasn't something that he wasn't caught unawares. He wasn't a mistake. He was choosing to not water his lawn against the repeated influence of the local one.
What he got is he got caught in a tug of war between two powerful mm-hmm. agendas. One, we're having a drought, conserve water, and the other is keep your lawn green. This is a nice community. And guess which side the code enforcement came down on, and which side he felt it. But again, moot point.
But you also don't. But that is a prime example of someone who is choosing to try to make a point by breaking a law, while being a regular citizen. That's perfectly in your right. But someone who is acting as a police officer who is also,
is that somebody we should automatically disqualify
yes.
from completing the process?
I believe so.
Well, let me add something to that, just for the devil's advocate.
Okay.
Because having done this for 26 years, if you got a misdemeanor conviction, you didn't work well with the system. Because if that, let's assume what you're saying. If that's your deputy's first time he's ever in the history of his life disobeyed a rule, I don't know any prosecutor in this country that won't give you a diversion and throw it away if you're willing to pay back the cost of that water, or like the Tom Selleck did, you know, had to bring in a big tanker of water to pay back the city because he was using it for the fire hydrant, and they didn't convict him either. So, back to Truman's point, if that's the only thing he's ever done in his life that's wrong, they look at this guy's, you know, a pearly white criminal history, he's never done anything except water his lawn when he shouldn't have. I find it very difficult to believe that if he didn't throw himself at the mercy of that judge didn't sound right. You pay the fine, we'll divert this, and there'll be no misdemeanor conviction. If he got a misdemeanor conviction, I'm with Trenton. He, nothing against your deputy, he'd been a little rebellious, or he had a history that we didn't know about, that the court did, because I've seen pretty hard, what they call hang 'em high judges who, if that's the only thing you've ever done wrong in your life, will usually give you a diversion. There's no misdemeanor conviction. So I kind of fall down on Trenton's side that if he's willing to flaunt the law for that, who's to say he won't use judgment to flaunt another law he doesn't think is appropriate? And he doesn't have that choice because he's sworn that local law.
We got lots of minor misdemeanors. California doesn't do diversion on misdemeanors. So it's just straight up, you're guilty or you're not. You know, he opted to plead guilty. He says, you know what? I didn't water my lawn. I'm trying to save water. Again, I think probably before we go to the automatic disqualifier, we kind of need to put some mature eyes on some of that de minimis stuff.
What about gross misdemeanor?
That I have no problem with.
Problem is most states don't.
They don't have
Indiana
that definition.
Has A, B, and C misdemeanors. So here you have misdemeanor, gross misdemeanor. So you got to say misdemeanor.
Yeah, not every state uses that term, gross.
Just so you know, for me, and I know I'm part of your board, I would recommend we stick with what you have because I don't want to get in. I'll be honest with you. Then that officer comes here and does something, and the first thing citizens will do is, oh, you hired against that criminal conviction. I don't care if it's not one wrong. The point is, now he's got a criminal conviction. If it's a misdemeanor, it's a crime.
Yeah,
so you hired an officer with a criminal conviction, and now he thumped my defendant. Yeah, thanks, Chief. Well, it wasn't a disqualifier. We had him because he just didn't want his lawn. No one's going to care about that. The headline's going to read, officer was hired with criminal conviction.
That's exactly how
they're going to say, because he failed to water his lawn, or he did water his lawn. It's just going to say, officer was hired with, and I think we went through that a couple years ago. Here.
Oh, it really did. It was a lot more egregious.
Oh, yeah.
I think what it was, right? It was a punching incident on the ferry. but no, I see the point. I mean, I can live with it. I'm just concerned that at some point we're getting a little too draconian with automatic disqualifiers when they really ought to be things that need to be vetted. This accomplishes the big one, though. I think we dealt successfully with a lying standard. It's nice and it's tight. Those are the only 2 points I had.
And Amber, did you encounter any problems with misdemeanor? Small misdemeanor convictions in the personal history statements?
There are some, but it's hard to... I mean, the ones that I have encountered are like, it's not, I didn't water my lawn. It's like, I did something I really, I shouldn't have done. And quite frankly, I think a lot of the ones that I come across are, like a minor in possession is a misdemeanor, but this says misdemeanor as an adult while employed in a criminal justice capacity. So a kid who, is in college and has an MIP, this does not disqualify them. This is, again, I think the fact that it's while employed, is the key part of that. And so, there are misdemeanors that I come across, bless you, mostly on the entry levels, and it's generally like something, something totally goofy that you can chop. Like, there was one that some kid like mooned somebody and got caught and like had like a misdemeanor. That's not a disqualifier. You can look at that person and go, okay, they're an immature college student in a small town where there's nothing to do, and you can understand how those things occur, and it's comical, and that's all it is, and you move on. But I don't think that I have come across one yet that was a misdemeanor that occurred while employed in a criminal justice capacity. But I do, I mean, I think if you are the one enforcing the law and setting an example,
I don't know, I go back to what the chief said, which I thought was very good, which is the problem is perception and how it will play. And if we hire someone, in the headline and or the lawsuit, then how it's going to be treated. They're not going to get into the detail. They're just going to say, yeah, you hired someone who had a conviction for, That one, I have to admit.
Yeah, I want you. You got a vetting process, and if we're going to say, you know, the guy that failed to water his lawn during an extreme drought, you know, that then we vet it. And if we have something that's a little more serious, then we go, you know what, we're disqualifying you, as we looked at the circumstances, and we're not pleased with what we saw.
Right.
It's not all black. It's not all.
No, right. I understand.
You have to do some vetting of people to evaluate, and you really can't avoid that responsibility.
I agree.
All right. Can we table this session for now? And
We could actually. We're probably close enough to get a vote on it. I mean, those are points I think.
How about make a motion then? That would really get the issue on the table.
Okay, that's do you want to?
Yeah, I'll make a motion that we approve the agency
approved.
Disqualifier.
It's already approved.
It is approved.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you wanted to make a change.
Okay, no.
You had lots of discussion.
I stand corrected. No, I'm not. I want to make a motion to change it. I just want to throw it out for discussion.
Then I do declare this discussion closed.
The commission had asked, I drafted a rule for you. Context here is you had someone who blew off an exam notice or didn't show up. I wanted to come back and ask you for a reconsideration. I'm your lawyer, so here's the law. There is no automatic right to reconsideration according to the Washington courts. If it's not provided for in the rules, you can't reconsider or reopen a decision. So I drafted a rule for reconsideration. It's in the disbarment section. It follows section 9.6 that talks about individuals being removed at the request of the appointing authority or on the order of the secretary chief examiner. For a list of items, it's in Rule 9.6. I tried to follow the KISS principle with the rule here. You know, if you've been disbarred and you make a written application to the commission, you've got the burden of proof that it'll be put on the next agenda or an upcoming agenda at your convenience. Informal process and your decision is final. What final means in this state is there's a constitutional writ of review, so if you turn somebody down for some unconstitutional reason, but otherwise, again, your decision is your decision.
This lifting of a disbarment, that's, right now we have is it a year? So somebody applies, they can't apply again for another year,
right?
And so this is lifting that year waiting period.
Well, actually, there are several. That's a good question. You have a number of disbarments. There's a. I followed if you do. Oh, let's see. You guys don't have the rule books here. This follows 9.6, which refers to removal from the eligibility list on 10 days' notice. It includes permanent disqual. This is a. You're disqualified. It's not that 1 year.
This is a permanent disbarment.
Go ahead, please.
So that what you're talking about is when they apply and they are going to go through the oral panel. So if somebody doesn't pass an oral panel or they want to, come through it again, they can't do it first. So we don't have that the problem where we had the guy failed, immediately submitted his application, came in on the next interview cycle, which happened at the time to be 3 months from then, and so that is a separate. This is pertaining to an instance where there was a candidate who went through the process, was actually hired here, was in probationary period, quit, left, came and said came back, reapplied, was in the process of being rehired, left again or whatever, petitioned the commission to reinstate this person on the list, which they did, then again went through the hiring, he was selected and was going through the process of the chief's interview and all that sort of thing, and this individual completely stopped responding to all attempts to contact them. And at that point, the chief petitioned the commission. This was before any of our time here. I think Rob was the only person who was on the commission at the time. So the chief petitioned the commission to remove the person from the list for cause, which is a legitimate reason. The commission chose to remove the person for cause. So he was removed from the process. Recently, this person has reapplied. Once someone is removed for cause, they cannot re-enter the hiring process without approval from the commission because they've already been removed from the process. So this is addressing that. It's not related to the time between testing cycles. And that was we talked about it at the last meeting, and that's, I think, an important part of understanding how this fits into everything.
Right. It's just you don't have to listen to the person's appeal, because if you have no rule for reconsideration, it's a done deal. If you want to have a reconsideration process, I brought you something for discussion.
So I have a question then. Would this apply? So because this person has reapplied, currently there's no process for that. So if we wouldn't be able to grandfather them into the process, right? The commission would have to pass this, and then the person would have to reapply and have the benefit of this rule. We can't just now we have this.
You can't go backwards.
Right, we can't go backwards, right.
I was taking disbarment on its face to be, you can't be employed here.
Right.
It's in effect an addition to the list you were just talking about. It's an automatic disqualifier. And you'll note on the list that Amber brought you, it appears in many of the automatic disqualifier lists.
So if we don't have something like this right now, that person, for example, cannot apply, period.
Correct.
Cannot apply.
He's disbarred from employment.
Disbarred from, yeah.
This is the one unusual circumstance where someone might have somehow been dismissed, and later other things come to light that indicate that that wasn't done in the right way.
Except when you hear about that, this person, for example, was given lots of
chances
before disbarment.
Well, remember, it wouldn't just apply to this person, Joe. It would apply to
the process is that you have a lot of chances before disbarment happens. I mean, this is an example where that has happened.
In the commission, so as an example, when this occurred the first time, the commission would have heard the petition to remove the person and would have the ability to weigh the cause and say, oh, that's a circumstance that I could relate to and could see how maybe they deserve another chance, or what happened in this case was that they've said, obviously there's enough information here to say, you know, you've had X number of chances and unfortunately now there are no more. So there would be the opportunity before disbarment for the commission to hear that and make a decision.
Right.
This is basically just giving them another opportunity to come back and say, oh, you know,
this could be sometime later. This could be years later.
Right.
Something that's really what it's about. There is, you're correct. There is a period immediately at that time they have a chance to go through and process of appeal and many different things. I don't know. I mean, I guess this is going to be a very unusual situation.
I was trying to think about what it would apply. You're on the list here, and you accept a job at another agency, and 10 years pass, and you apply for a lateral position here, but you've blown off and are disbarred from employment with this department. I was trying to think of one that was not way out there.
Yeah,
it sounded reasonable. Yeah. That was about the only one I could think of.
But that is it. That won't happen if you're applying here and you're applying at other agencies, and you accept a position in another agency, you wouldn't be disbarred unless.
The thing might be you decide, I'd rather work in Renton.
Well, people do this all the time.
That's not going to produce disbarment. You have to add the fact that they're going to now not respond to correspondence.
Right.
If someone takes a position in Seattle and then calls them and says, hey, I took a job in Seattle, drop me from the list. Thanks for giving me a chance to apply. We don't have disbarment. None of this applies.
Right.
This is a guy that takes a deadbeat approach after he takes a job in Seattle. And
again, I was just, if you wanted to list, I drafted a rule if you want to do it. If you do nothing, there's no constitutional reason. You've given due process several times in the process because they could appeal the removal from the list. They could appeal or show up if the appointing authority wants to remove them. This is a situation where they basically have blown you off and want to come in sometime down the road. Again, if you want to listen to this guy, you need a rule. If you don't, it's done.
I can't imagine a situation where I would want to listen to somebody that's been disbarred, but do you want to go around the table and make your opinions?
I kind of feel the same way. I think, you know, it's always good for every process to have an end. And the never-ending avenue of litigation doesn't do anybody any good. I always try and look at things and see how would something misapply to somebody. And you just heard me do that in two instances. This one I'm having a hard time thinking where I would really want that deadbeat applicant, you know, to be welcome on the second go-around. So I think probably at this point we don't need this, and it's probably not a fitting solution for this. The circumstances we discussed.
I agree with that. I think disbarment is a final answer, and before the final answer, there are lots of avenues for appeal, but once you have a final answer, I'm willing for that to be the final answer.
Rob, yeah, this is Rob Kelly. I came in late just for a little housekeeping. I have no conflicts of interest or any disclosures to make. In looking at this, the only situation I thought of is it's some kind of extraordinary circumstance where you have like a family illness or a personal illness and you are physically or mentally unable to actually respond to correspondence. But I think those kind of things can be handled through other courses and existing rules that wouldn't necessarily rise to like a deadbeat. That's something we would hear and that the Secretary Chief Examiner could acknowledge after the fact, and we would have an existing process in place. So. Once you're disbarred and removed from the list, I don't see a recourse other than a normal appeal process that already exists.
I agree exactly with what Rob said. I think it's a unicorn situation. The chances of it happening are so low that there should be some other things that would occur. I don't really care. I think if we put it in, it'll probably never be used. But at the same time, maybe we just don't need to kind of create something like that occurring.
Okay. Do we need a vote or a motion on this? Or
unless somebody makes a motion to change the rules. Hearing none, you move on.
Okay, let's move on. Next up, report by the Chief of Police.
All right. First of all, I want to thank the Commission for all the work that you do on a regular basis. And we spoke earlier about hiring, and I think it's good to report back that we just had our three sergeants come off probation. They all made it. I held interviews with each one of them prior to the date. It was November 1, so 2 days as permanent sergeants, and I think they have all three performed very well and are doing well and will continue to grow into these positions. This isn't something, and anybody who's got any law enforcement experience will tell you that sergeant is probably the hardest job as far as transition. Because you go from the line troops to the sergeant, and then the sergeant is kind of that person that keeps the troops happy and then tries to keep management happy. And they've always said that's the most difficult job. And so they're learning that very quickly, that it is different. But I think we chose three very good candidates, and they have done very well and will continue to do well. We've also had some come off probation. John Bingham and John Ledbetter, and I don't know if I have been here recently enough to share that. They both come off probation and have done very well and continue to do well. And then we have four others that are currently on probation and are doing well. We keep track of them and monitor their progress, and they're progressing and doing well. So Cameron Lewis just graduated from the Basic Law Enforcement Academy. He's our newest entry-level candidate. And it's just phenomenal. In fact, I wish I had brought the card from his parents. they wrote me one of the nicest thank you cards I've ever received. They talked about what a pleasure it was that each teacher in schools he went through was just a very bright young man and was very good and has been service oriented his whole life. And I have talked about it before, that Cameron, when he worked at Safeway, had an elderly gentleman who came in like the ends of a sweet potato cut off, and Cameron would make sure that was done when he came in the door and put him in his bag and handed it to him. That was kind of service that Cameron gave to people that wasn't required, wasn't part of his description, job description, but he did it. And I find that he's doing the same things here. So him and the other new hires are just doing great, and him being the entry level. And he did very well at the academy. In fact, he scored the highest score of all the candidates on the final exam.
Wow.
At Belia. So I thought that was kind of neat. So I got to be there at his graduation and hand him his certificate, and his family was able to pin his badge on him. So I just think that's neat that we have those kind of officers, and I get compliments about them all the time. In fact, one of the city councilmen brought up about something that John Ledbetter had done, but it's just constant with these guys. So very excited, very happy, and Amber has done a lot of work, as you all have, as did Kate before Amber, and we know that in the 2.5 years that I've been here, hiring was something that was on the forefront of everyone's mind. What kind of officers are we bringing to Bainbridge Island? And I think one of the things that citizens ask is that we bring officers that are Bainbridge-centric, that understand what they do here. And I will tell you, the level of service that our officers give citizens is phenomenal. I get letters and emails all the time. So very happy with where we're at. And so by January, first week of January, Cameron should be done with FTO. So we will finally be at full staff. We haven't been the 2.5 years I've been here. So that'll be the first time that we are actually at full staff. And we have no openings. So I know we prepared several months ago with new lateral and entry-level lists, and haven't used them because we have no openings, and so that's a good thing, and so we're in a good spot. I don't know what else you want me to report on.
Chief, so the staffing is great right now, time is great. If someone went on disability or something happened, would you be stressed again, or are you in a good situation right now?
We're in a good situation. Good. I mean, okay. Obviously, and it's no secret, I've said this publicly, and I've talked about this with Doug. I think we do need to increase the number of officers on the department by a few.
Right.
But that will come with time and budgets and all that. But so we're currently on a 12-hour system shift,
right?
Which I think lends itself to being very efficient. Which before the 4-10s, I don't know if you know, they were on the kind of the 5-8s, 4-10s. It was very clunky, in my opinion, hard to track. Now it's very simple. We have 4 shifts. And it's very set and good. We have roll calls or briefings, and just works very well. Much more efficient. So we're doing a lot of things that are much much better. So excited to give a state of the department address. That's it. We're in a good place, and we're learning as we go. We learning and growing and doing good things very excited about where we are today to where we were.
So we don't have officers having to work overtime and some of the things we've had in the past, and it's improved a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we still have overtime.
Yeah, I know,
shifts,
I understand.
But
that's,
yeah,
that doesn't happen,
no, typical.
But, yeah.
No.
But not what we had, not levels.
No, there was a time, I think we were down to 14 or 15,
yes.
And
yes.
That was just unsustainable.
Okay.
But we're beyond that.
So is a full-time officer 3 12-hour shifts or?
4. So you work 4 12s and then you're off 4 days. And so if you do the math, that's, I want to say, 2,190 hours a year. And typically if you work 5-8s, that's 2,080. So they have days we give them what we call Kelly days to make up that difference, so they're not working, 100 and some hours for free. So we balance those hours, and we're able to do that. And we do it so that we're not,
right,
causing people to be shorthanded.
And do officers regularly rotate which 12-hour shift they have?
Every 4 months.
Okay.
So if you're on night late shift, 4 months later you're on day shift. And we've offered to do fixed shifts so that they bid for them. So, seniority, you bid for a shift, but they wanted to to rotate, so they rotate. That was their choice. I was willing to do that.
How are the motorcycles working out?
Great. And as we're getting up to Manpower, as soon as Cameron gets free, so he'll be another person. We've been out, but we're going to be out a lot more.
Yeah. Some of them. I haven't seen them out, but
they've been out. Yeah. So you know, like we have, we started a new thing where we have a book called Traffic Emphasis Patrol. So one of the biggest complaints on the island is, you know, traffic enforcement. So we set up traffic signs and we take these traffic emphasis requests. Location, time of day of week, and we work those areas. So I know I live up on the north end of the islands. I go down Hidden Cove. People try to avoid the ferry traffic. Yeah. I don't know if you know that.
It's a big problem.
They'll bust out of Sportsman's Club and race up Sunrise or Madison and come across Hidden Cove to try to beat the traffic. And I've been through there several times, and our sickle officers are sitting right there waiting for them. So, which is good, because that's where one of our complaints has been. So they've been out and about, and we'll do more. So
I have a couple questions. Earlier in the year, maybe it was last, you were looking into some federal grant funding for a community resource officer position. Status of that, and I think you had somebody identified that was going to fill that position and backfill theirs. What's the status of that?
We did not get that grant.
Oh, okay.
So we got a letter from, in fact, I want to say it just came 2 weeks ago that Doug and I got that, maybe a week and a half ago. It wasn't long ago, within the last 14 days, I think. It's from the COPS grant.
Right.
Only about 18% of the departments who applied got it. And I will tell you, living in a city, whether you know this, I don't know if you know this, we have the second lowest violent crime rate in the state of Washington here on Bainbridge Island. And you have to have a significant issue that you're trying to address. That's what they want to see, as you look at the reasons to justify a community resource officer, which is what we were authorized to apply for. When you look around the cities that got them, you can see the logic in why they awarded the cities that they did. So, and only then 18% of those got them. So, no, we didn't get ours. We are going to keep that position. I think, as I just got back from the International Association for Chiefs of Police Conference, one of the things that they talk about is building that reservoir of trust with the community. And how you do that is having a community resource officer. So that's what we do. We have Carla Sias is in that position. And what we were going to do is her patrol position that is vacated by her being there would then be backfilled by that federal grant, which we didn't get, so it won't be. But we're going to keep her in that full-time position because, as you listen to Ms. Gupta, who's the Assistant U.S. Attorney General, you listen to the National President for the NAACP, Kathleen O'Toole from Seattle PD, and Will Johnson, the Arlington Police Chief, who sat on that panel. And then if you look at President Obama's 21st Century Policing Report, one of the things that they talk about, in fact, I would say the strongest point, is building those relationships of trust or maintaining them. And having officers involved in the community is extremely important. The only time anybody sees an officer is when they're doing enforcement. That's not a good thing. And they talked about that over and over and over. And so, yes, would I have loved to have another patrol officer fill that? But I think we're fine with what we're doing. In fact, I think it's working very well. And we will continue to keep her in that position. So, yes, I would have liked to got the grant. We didn't get it.
Great, thank you.
But you had another question.
Yeah, my other question is, as far as staffing levels, so you said you've been talking publicly and letting Doug know that you would like to grow the department. So came for a day, what's the staffing levels you would like to grow to? Or if you look at comparable cities to Bainbridge, you know, Mercer Island or others, what's the per capita officer to population, you know, similar demographics that you're looking to staff the department?
Well, again, in fact, we're looking at that. And, of course, we have to fit it within the city budget, right? Obviously, every department would like to add staff to do more things. So can we do with what we're doing? We are, and we will. But I think as we've looked at it, and a good example is Mercer Island. So that's our closest comparable, unless someone knows of another city in the state of Washington. So Mercer Island has 22,000 people. 13.11 square miles. They have a crime rate that is almost identical. Ours is a little bit better, but it is almost identical. So less than half. So the square miles of Bainbridge Island is 27.61. So they're about less than half our square mileage. We have about 24,000 population. They have about 22,000. Very similar crime rates. They have 32 officers. We have 21. So, and I think the national average, and Rich, you probably know, I think it's, I want to say around, I don't want to say. I don't know what it is. Maybe 1.52. I was trying to remember the numbers.
Eventually, I've heard 1.6, but it's really variable.
And it's really, it depends on crime rates and all that. So,
but Mercer Island.
Mercer Island is our comparable, and they're at 32, mm-hmm. Or were. So,
is that full-time, or do they count?
Full-time.
Full-time.
It's full-time. Wow. So do we need 32? No, I don't think we do. I think we could do it. If I was king for a day, I'd add four. So we have four shifts, and I would add one officer to each shift. But obviously, we have to do what's prudent for the community and cost-wise and do more with less, right? That's what we live. So obviously, as chief, would I like to up the manpower? Absolutely. And I think, no question, Doug has been a huge supporter. We wouldn't have been able to do what we've done the last 2.5 years without him. But he and I are having those discussions, and we will come up with what is best for the city, best for the department, best for the community. So I have complete faith in that. So obviously, as chief, I'm biased. King for a day, yeah, I'd add four officers. I'd add one to each shift because I think that would really do us well. But, you know, we'll see what we get. But
great, thanks.
That's where we're at.
How are they, Chief? How are they using 32 officers in Mercer County?
I have not looked at their organization
right.
structure.
It'd be interesting to know.
They do have an SRO.
Right. I was just going to say, do they?
They do have an SRO.
Yeah, I'm sure they would. Yeah.
They do, so I have not looked at how they're organizationally structured. We could do that, I guess, but we are on the low end. In fact, it was Doug who presented at the gala that we had, the awards night, that showed the number of officers per 1,000. And I want to say Doug's numbers show us we were the lowest in the state. One of the bottom three, I can tell you that, in the state of Washington at that time. And that was a year ago, I think, if I remember correctly. So Doug's done some very good research on that and shown that. So, and no, obviously as chief, I'd like to see more, but we have to do what's prudent and do what's right by the community and take in all the factors. Any other questions for me?
Oh, I have a question. How would you describe the morale now that the staffing is it the officers? I think people are.
I don't want to be. Sound overly confident, but I can tell you that I still do my one-on-ones with the officers. I meet with at least one officer per week, and individually to talk to them to get feedback. How are we doing? What do we need to do better? How's your job going? What are you doing? And make sure that we're all aligned in our goals. And I'd say it's very high, very high. And they're very happy and enjoy coming to work every day. And I will tell you, the community here in Bainbridge Island is phenomenal. I have never felt so supported as a law enforcement officer I have in Bainbridge Island. People just express support and concern and assistance and what can we do and to help and very, I don't feel like in the same family. It's been wonderful. And I think they feel, I know they do, they feel the same way. I can't keep up with the number of entries that we do in the employment tracking for the number of compliments we get from citizens about our officers. So it's relentless, which is a good thing.
So you're not expecting any mass exodus?
No. I think they're very pleased.
All right. Moving on. Amber.
Okay, a couple things. One, we have two newly appointed commissioners in this room. Dan and Rich have been reappointed to term starting in January. Mm-hmm. And we have a third. And then we have a third new commissioner, Julie Hersom. I don't know if any of you know her, but she will be joining us to replace Rob in January. So, sad, bittersweet. We're excited to have her, and it will be a big loss to not have you on the commission anymore. So, but that's all really good news there. And then we had talked last time about sort of a status of where we were hiring-wise, so I circulated the current list, and just as a refresher, we will, even as of December, when the some of the names expire, we will still have 6 entry and 3 laterals on the list. So, and I spoke with Barb Burns today about sort of the clerk hiring status, and that has been sort of pushed out till June timeframe-ish, so we still don't have an exact date, but that would put our process, if we consider June, the clerk process is a little more lengthy than what the officer panels are. So I think realistically, if we held a panel sometime in April for entry lateral and the clerk, I think we would be sitting in good shape to sort of refresh the names on both the officer lists and then get some clerk names in there so that get a list established for the clerk position so that when so there's the ability to have a little bit of transition time between when we hire and when the retirement occurs. So I think we're still looking pretty good as far as, where we stand on the list, which is great. And that also gives us a little bit more of a buffer. So hopefully when we hold a panel the next time, we have some more, we have some more candidates that we're able to get in. So that's something we can look at setting dates for, when the new year comes around, probably February timeframe or so, we'll want to maybe look at establishing dates, or March timeframe probably is more like it. So that's, I think, a really positive update. And then that's really all I have. It's been kind of a quiet month. The way that it looks now, I really don't think that we have, honestly, anything for the December agenda. So I can hold out and follow up with you, when we get a little closer and see if there's, an appetite for canceling that meeting. But there's honestly nothing to put on that agenda at this point in time. I think we're pretty well wrapped up for the year and sort of ready to kick off 2016 with, a new set of faces. And we'll all work on getting our, annual ethics training set up. We'll be electing a new chair and vice chair come January. And so lots of, I think, really good things on the horizon. And I think it's just funny because it's, this is like sort of wrapping up. In January will be my second year at the city. And this was all such a new thing to me when I first started, and I think we as a commission, you as a commission, and us as a sort of a team have really come a long way and have seen, I think, a lot more than most civil service commissions see in a lifetime. So I just wanted to say thanks, because it's been a really it's been a challenging experience, but it's also been really enriching for me. So that's all I have.
Thanks to you. And then, Rob, this might be your last meeting.
Yes.
Thank you, Rob, for your service.
Thank you.
I appreciate
it's,
it.
It's been a real honor. It's between this and the Ethics Board, it's been 4 years, and it's been a real honor to serve the city and get to know my colleagues. And, I really enjoyed it. And I got to say that the department that I walked into 4 years ago is vastly different than you've made it. So hats off to you as well for the work that you've done and the leadership that you've shown the department. So it's been transformational to the entire community. Many thanks.
I just want to second that thought. It's it is a whole lot better and a big turnaround. So take some credit.
But that wasn't, I take that it was a good team of Amber and Kate and Doug, who has been a very great boss, and getting trophies in the board, phenomenal. So that was good. So, and it's been the community has shown me a great amount of support, and we have a very good group of officers. I talk to other chiefs in the state and the issues they're having, and I always go, doing pretty good. Yeah. So it was a team effort. There's a lot of people that I take my hat off and credit for, and so. People like to, I think, sometimes look at the city and criticize them when they make a mistake. But I think there's also a lot of good things that go on that they don't hear about. And part of it is, as you say, Rob, a transformational process that occurred with the police department would not have occurred without a lot of help from a lot of people in this community, including city government employees and the community itself. So hats off to everybody.
So thank you all. I really appreciate it.
appreciate it.
Thank you, Rob.
Well, you're welcome to be an honorary member of the Civil Service Commission. And you're welcome at any time you want.
Please, Rob.
We're really short on public comment.
Yeah, I'll do one straight. I'll read recipe.
Can you be our star? Can you show up at the meetings as our member of the public?
That's right.
Well, actually, we want to let you know that around the commission, we can put you on the list of people for the oral board.
Sure.
Yes, now that would
be
good. That would be good.
We'll have some incredibly good insight.
Yes.
Well on that
that
That actually would be awesome.
Well, okay. Are you going to apply for the department?
There's that
clerk
thing.
All
right.
Is anyone on the table? Any more? Any comments? Final comments?
No.
I'm good.
All right, with that, the college meeting adjourned.
Happy holidays.